Lydia Wolanski is a freelance writer, editor, and translator. She studied at McGill University and at UBC and has a master's in fine arts in creative writing. She has also lived in other places around the world and across Canada. She now lives in Yaremche, Ukraine, and is currently spending most of her time at the Maidan, reporting on the protests there. She joins us now from Kyiv. Lydia, welcome, Vitayu.
Hi.
You were saying that you're very tired. It is late at night. We're speaking at 2 in the afternoon on Friday here on the west coast of Canada. So it's midnight for you, and you've probably been up for a long time.
Yeah, I had an interview with BBC at 3:30 in the morning. So, and then I was up again at 8:30. It's been like that for some time now. I'm not sleeping very much, but I mean, I don't seem to mind it too much. I do feel tired tonight, though. It's catching up to me a bit. I spent a lot of time monitoring what's going on the Maidan, and I'm doing a lot of translating on my own of information that comes in and posting it for public consumption. So.
And where is it being published?
Well, most of this I'm doing just on Facebook, but I'm in a bunch of groups there, so it's getting a fair bit of coverage. A lot of people are seeing it.
Okay, where, for anybody who's listening and wants to get up-to-the-minute coverage as you post it, where would they find it?
They can just look my name up in Facebook. It's Rascal and Dear.
Okay. Now, you've been reporting on the very rapidly changing events in Kyiv at the Maidan. What is happening now?
Well, yesterday they had these negotiations with Yanukovych, which I think everybody had a pretty good idea were not going to be worth anything, and that's exactly what happened. It was mostly like, you must do this, and then maybe we'll do that. Like they said, you have to release Hrushevsky Street, which is the main area where the actual conflict has been going on. There's been no real conflict on the Maidan for some time, and that's where people have been getting shot and stuff. And they were supposed to move away from there, the people on the Maidan, and then maybe in 4 to 48 hours, they would start releasing all the people that they had detained and arrested.
Did they did he offer to call off his dogs when the people, at any point?
No.
Of course not.
No, that's the whole point. I mean, there's like really nothing being offered. And if they had accepted that, it would have been a terrible capitulation. Mm-hmm. So when Klitschko came on last night and told people about it, he looked very discouraged, which is unfortunate, but people were like really like, you're kidding. Everybody's whistling and booing and hissing all over the place. And then Chahnybok came out, the leader of Svoboda, and he was like very firm, very clear, very direct. And he said, okay, these are our options. We do what they ask us to do and then they'll release everybody. Or we reject this offer and we go forward from there. And he says, well, if you reject this offer, you're going to be leaving your buddies in jail and Lord knows what might happen to them. And when they put it to a vote, the majority of people said, we go ahead.
Wow.
That it was really the only way they could have gone, because if had they accepted the other offer, it would have meant just that everything we've done until now was for nothing.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, there has been no progress made on the political scene.
Well, I don't think Yanukovych expected that. He might have expected that they would give in a little, because he's basically trying to get some time. Mm-hmm. He does not have actually that many of these riot police available in the country that he can really control Kyiv. And on top of that, there's been a lot of turmoil in the rest of the country. There's about 14 or 15 oblasts where the locals have taken over the oblast administration. So he's looking at a pretty serious crisis, not just in Kyiv, but all across the country right now. And the army is not behind him. He has absolutely nobody except these really nasty Berkut that a lot of people are starting to suspect are not even local Berkut, but some kind of like a private army of thugs based on their behavior and the kinds of things that they've been doing to people. I mean, one guy said that the way they're treating people is very much an MO of the way the Russians were treating people in Chechnya. So there's a suspicion that some of these men may actually be Russian soldiers and not Ukrainians at all, like mercenaries perhaps. Perhaps not officially Russian soldiers, but mercenaries. So he's actually starting to find himself between a rock and a hard place, I think.
Well, that seems to be kind of the impression that everyone has, is that he's desperate and hanging on to power, but yet he doesn't seem to understand the extent of the situation that he's in.
Well, right now he still has quite a bit on his side. I mean, the game is definitely not over. And I read a very good piece by James Scherer here, who has done a lot of he does a lot of writing about the region and has done so for about 20 years. And he said that, you know, it's probably highly unlikely that Yanukovych will win this one. The Ukrainians will win it, but there's going to be a lot worse happening before that happens. And I suspect that that is probably a very realistic view of the situation.
Now, what kind of opposition politically does Yanukovych have, and do the Ukrainian people have? Is there, you mentioned Klitschko, and he seems to, the consensus has been in the West that he really is kind of the one to lead Ukraine after Yanukovych falls, provided, of course, Putin doesn't send in the whole Russian army.
Yeah, well, with Sochi happening, you know, in early February, that's not likely to happen just now. But it does not give Ukrainians a very large window of opportunity to consolidate in case Putin does decide that he's going to come back here anyway. So right now we have to concentrate here in Ukraine on the opposition getting their act together, on somebody really emerging as a possible serious leader and showing leaderly qualities, and having a really serious game plan. Because if you now have a bunch of oblast administrations in the hands of local people, no matter how well they organize themselves, you still have to run the place. It's not just the Maidan. It's just not feeding everybody every day and making sure that they have warm clothes and medications. You have to start running the place for real. So there's an awful lot of work that needs to be done, and it has to be done in a real hurry, and there have to be people who are very smart about it. I actually wrote up a proposition about how to do something way back in December, because people were asking for ideas. And I said they need to form a temporary technical government, and it needs to include people like Yuri Yakhanurov, who have never been particularly politically engaged, but are extremely effective at what they do. They're very good managers. They're very good administrators. And there's a lot of people below the rank of minister that are that kind of person. Nobody knows who they are, but they're the ones that really do the work. The minister is the political face. The deputy minister and his assistants are the people that really do the work. And so somebody's got to be doing that now and have a plan for how this is all going to start happening, because it has to hit the ground running. You cannot have a country this size go into chaos.
Well, see, and that's the thing, Lydia, because there has been no rule of law. I mean, the laws that are there have been a joke. Yanukovych's regime is corrupt to the core. The Rada has been a joke. The whole system, in fact, you know, has been a joke. There's no rule of law. The judges now, with this new law that was passed just last week, the judges are above the courts entirely.
Well, the thing that people have to understand, and I keep emphasizing, is that actually by law nothing was passed last week. That's the extent to which this regime has become quite lawless. And in fact, Ukraine, as far as I'm concerned, and other people have said it, but I know I've been saying it almost since it happened, is that right now it's a putsch. This is no longer a lawful government, because everything that it's doing is completely beyond the law. And what happened last week is they had, on the 16th of January, they had, according to picture count, 119 people in the Verkhovna Rada. The Verkhovna Rada has 450 seats. You cannot possibly even open a session if you only have 119 people there. You don't even have a quorum, let alone a majority, to pass something. So in effect, there was no lawful session. And if there had been, there was no lawful law passed, because there weren't enough people for a majority. And then the way it was done was by a show of hands that was counted in a total of 3 seconds. So the whole thing was demonstratively done in a completely unlawful way. And to me, that's sort of the culmination of what's been going on with Yanukovych ever since he came to power. He's dissed the constitution from top to bottom, and then he changed it back to the previous version, so now he had a lot more power. He's dissed the regulations of the parliament. He's dissed other legislation. And I suspect that if somebody bothered to do a real check on how laws have been passed since he's been in office, probably 90% or more of them will turn out to have not been passed lawfully. So you have a situation where you have all this legislation that actually is, according to Ukrainian law, is illegal. It's unconstitutional or it's illegal. The Constitution says that Ukrainian deputies have to vote in person. Well, they haven't been doing that. They have one guy pressing buttons for five people, and it's all been taped a million times. Everybody knows that's what goes on. Well, it means that every law that was passed that way is actually illegal. It's not a law, and it cannot be enforced. So the same thing is true of these draconian measures that they pretended to pass on January 16th. In fact, according to Ukrainian law, they are not law. Not that it stopped anybody.
That's just it. We're talking on Friday. This is going to go on the air on Sunday, and anything can happen in 48 plus hours in between. But let's just say that that the people take the rest of the administrative centers in the country. Let's say even the Dnipropetrovsk and Donetsk get in the hands of the pro-Ukrainian faction, and pretty much Yanukovych has got no leg to stand on, and he, I don't know, leaves the country or surrenders or whatever. What then? How is the country going to be run, do you think?
It depends if somebody can hit the ground running with a good team. That's leadership has been a problem for Ukraine historically. Mm. There's either too many of them or not enough of them, or they're completely incompetent. It really, ironically, is a very big problem. Because you look at the Maidan, Ukrainians are fantastic at self-organization. Mm-hmm. They got the whole thing together. Nobody particular was running the show, and they're doing it. And that made me think that what Ukraine needs to do is decentralize, really seriously decentralize, devolve as much power as possible to the local level. Let communities run themselves, collect their own taxes, and the central government only handles a few very kind of fundamental issues like an army, you know, quality control, monetary policy, and a few odds and ends. Everything else, medicine, schooling, everything can be devolved to the local level. And I suspect that this is what this country needs in order for it to be run effectively. We don't need a president. Ukrainians do not need a president. It's a position with too much power, and there simply are not the right kinds of people in Ukraine who can handle that level of power and not get completely corrupt. And it's not a necessary position. You have a legislature, you have a parliament, it forms a government, the government does the executive part, you have a judiciary branch, you get that cleaned up. You do not need a president, just like Canada doesn't have a president. There's no reason for a president. So Ukraine can really shift the balance of power to the local level, and I think that will be very good for the country. Because it's much easier to eliminate corruption in that kind of a situation, because everything is happening now on the level where everybody knows everybody. You see each other face to face every day kind of thing. So I would say that that is also one thing that will allow Ukrainians to get rid of the incredibly high level of corruption that has developed over the last 10 years.
On Thursday, there were email reports circulating that the media would be basically shut down except for state-run organs, and there was also concern that the internet would be shut down. There have been very many Ukrainian sites that have had DDoS attacks. So what actually did happen?
I've personally had almost no trouble at all. I mean, there's been a few times when, you know, like Facebook glitched or something like that, but every site I've gone to has pretty much worked. I've been surprised, actually, because I thought, too, and I thought how terrible and terrifying it would be if everything started going down. But so far, other than, like, you know, momentary things, temporary things, like I think maybe one site went down for an hour or two, Channel 5 or something like that. But basically, everything seems to be running just fine. Mobiles are running fine. I think the issue there is that Yanukovych, because of what he's been doing in this country, and a lot of it has been raping business, he does not have business on his side any more than he's got the army on his side. He's got the big boys because, you know, they owe him. But middle-range business and small business, like, hate them because they've been raiding companies and stealing them from people and beating people to take their companies away. So I don't know if they would have much cooperation from the operators that would have to do all this stuff, because the government can't itself go and turn things off. It's the operators that have to do this. And this is their business. This is their bread. Why should they do it and lose revenues? So they're not on his side. They're not in his pocket. So there's a lot of things that were simply not, you know, have not been done right. The sad thing is if he had let Yulia go to Europe for her treatment, told her don't come back or we'll put you in jail again, if he had signed the EU agreement, everything would have been hunky-dory. He would have been elected easily in 2015 by the population because of what he did. And for some reason, it's like that fatal flaw that people can have and countries can have. He did absolutely everything wrong, and now everybody's against him.
And there's no going back for him.
No, no. I don't think this is going to end well for him. A lot of people are starting to call him Yanuchescu.
Right. Like Nicholas Ceaușescu from in Romania.
Yeah.
Do you suppose that that he'll meet with as the same kind of fate?
I think he will. I think he will. Whether it'll be like Hitler in his bunker or whether it'll be like Ceaușescu is just a moot point. But I think that's what he's cruising towards.
Wow. Well, our hopes and our prayers and our good thoughts are with all of you at the Maidan. I hope that the people are aware of how much support they have in the West. There is just an enormous amount of support here. Vancouver, there's not a very large community as compared to, say, Montreal or Toronto or Winnipeg or Edmonton, but the people are out there in full force.
Well, it's actually very active. Since I lived there, it's really changed a lot because there's a lot of young Ukrainians from a new wave of immigration there, and they're extremely active. So I've been really enjoying it because I'm in their group on Facebook. I have a sense that it's quite an alive group, and they've done their own Automaidan and stuff like that. The thing is that the moral support is good, but as one girl puts it in a video, if you're, you know, moral support is wonderful, but if your child is bleeding, moral support isn't what she needs. She needs help, and Ukraine needs help.
Many people are coming forth and asking where they can send money safely so that it doesn't get into the wrong hands.
I would say if you know somebody in Ukraine, that's probably the best way to do it. And you can do it through any of the money wire services, you know, PayPal, Skrill, Western Union. All these services do work. You can do it through bank accounts, although that's generally expensive. But what Ukrainians really need right now is, especially for Europe, because the U.S. has actually been doing rather well. The U.S. has, you know, sort of sat up and took notice and immediately said that it was the regime's fault that everything went bad on Sunday. But Europe has been just sitting on its hands, and it's been very frustrating because I think there are just too many vested interests tied into Russia. So, like, for instance, Angela Merkel is very reluctant to make a move. And I'm surprised that the Brits, they're really not that connected strongly to Russia through the gas industry. So I'm not entirely sure whether it's just because they don't want to lose all those billionaire bank accounts or what it is. But countries in Europe where these people are banking and buying things are not investigating the sources of the money, and they're supposed to do that based on their own anti-money laundering laws. So that's been the big push here, is to get European banks to start following their own legislation and investigating who the heck they're getting their money from and where that money's coming from.
Well, the problem is, of course, who wants to give up the money?
Yep. And, you know, like Alexander Yanukovych's value, he increased his personal assets by 7,000% in the few years his father's been in power.
Yes, of course. Lydia, one last question before I let you go. And there have been stories that the Berkut have been going into hospitals and dragging people out of their hospital beds. And
yes, they have. They have. It's been pretty horrible. The protesters, in some cases, who were injured were taken to a particular hospital that's actually not far from where I live. It's called the emergency hospital. It's like a hospital that operates as an emergency room. And they were placed in the toxicology ward, and 10 cops were standing, or policemen or people in uniform were standing around guarding them. And so the Automaidan is a bunch of people with cars that are doing a lot of things like going and blocking Mejahedia and, in this case, trying to prevent the police from, controlling the people who are coming in injured. And, last night the police organized a trap for them. They called them out. They pretended to be somebody needing their assistant. They called them out. And the guys drove to this place and suddenly found that the road was blocked by a big unmarked white bus, and a bunch of, you know, hooligans in uniform jumped out, beat the heck out of a whole bunch of people, absconded with 19 of them, and bashed their cars to absolute shreds. It was really horrible, and those people were in court today. the court was supposed to decide what to do with him. It's like really so freakish because people are getting beaten up and then they're being accused of beating somebody up and they're the ones that were beaten up. So it's like this really Orwellian kind of thing going on. It's terrible.
Indeed. Lydia Walensky, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Our thoughts and prayers are with you and the brave people on the Maidan. Stay safe.
Okay, Paulette. Thank you very much.